The Hand of Robin Squires, Chapter 13. During the night, a thick fog crept southward along the coast, so that when Octodon emerged from Alsuset's wigwam at dawn, the cove was shrouded in white mist. Being careful not to waken the old chief and his wife, he picked up his moose skin robe and beaver pelt, which kept him warm while he slept. Tagalak was already up, spreading bear grease generously over his body. He handed the skin pouch to Octodon. For now, yesterday's angry words were forgotten. "Here, little brother, help yourself." Octodon began greasing his arms and legs. The grease would keep him warm and prevent flies from biting. "You will not need as much as I," Tagalak said. "Where I am going, the flies come in clouds." Octodon knew that the inland lake country where Tagalak was going was infested with flies, the same swamps that fed the moose bred flies. The task ahead of Tagalak would be difficult. Usually the hunting was done by several men. This time Tagalak must do it alone as further proof of his manhood. Octodon did not envy the ritual his brother must follow in order to marry Wasowik. Tagalak read his thoughts. "Someday your turn will come, little brother. Have no fear of that." "Never," Octodon said, although he supposed that someday he might take a wife. He did not want to think about it sooner than was absolutely necessary. "Our mother and father would want you to," Tagalak said gravely. "Our people must grow great and strong." Octodon did not offer to go with Tagalak. It would be an insult to suggest that he was unable to handle the hunt alone. "Don't forget, little brother, that my totem is Team, or the moose." Tagalak fingered the carved bone amulet around his neck. "I earned the right to wear my father's totem. With it, I cannot fail." The brothers finished greasing their bodies in silence. Tagalak pulled on his leggings, tied them to his belt, and pushed his feet into moccasins. Both leggings and moccasins were necessary in the forest. Octodon needed only a breech clout, moccasins, and, for now, a moose skin robe over his shoulders against the early morning chill. Because they had eaten well the night before, they were content with drinking leftover soup. As was their custom, the brothers parted without ceremony. Each simply went his own way. With Miko at his heels, Octodon carried the canoe to the cove and set it carefully on the sand. Then he returned for the beaver pelt and the baskets holding the small bone gorges attached to thin leather thongs, which were his fishing lines. The day before, he had dug a supply of worms, and these he put into the canoe. Arranging the beaver pelt on the bottom of as a cushion for Miko and himself, he pushed away from shore and knelt down on the soft fur. He heard the dogs barking on the other side of the camp as they set off with Tagalak. Octodon was pleased that the fog had brought a calm sea. In choppy waves, the canoe was easily upset, but this morning it slid quietly forward, making shiny folds of the water. He kept close to shore until he became aware of a low finger of land pointing toward the sea. It was the burial ground of his forefathers. To give the sacred land a wide berth, he made a large arc around it. It was said that the wailings of the dead could draw you underground into the land of souls, never to return. Once, when he had been snaring rabbits, he had gone too close, strangely attracted to the brushwood piled over the graves. He had heard no wailings, no one had called to him, yet he remembered feeling as if unforeseen eyes were watching him. The burial ground was forbidden territory, and no one knew he had gone so close. Had he known, Tagalak would have been angry with him. But then Tagalak often was. He seemed to think of himself as his father rather than his brother. Octodon and Tagalak had not always disagreed about the customs of their people. During the early years, Octodon had accepted his brother's words and those of Alsuset without question. He was eager to do whatever was expected of him, whether it was around the camp or during the hunt. But in his 12th year, he began to change. It was then he realized that before he could become a man, he must find a totem. Every grown Mi'kmaq male had a totem, an animal spirit that guided and protected him. Tagalog had always known that his totem would be Team, the moose, because as the older son, once he had earned it, his father's totem became his. As the second son, Actodon had to find his own totem. Finding a totem was important, but more important was proving his courage to himself. His bravery had to be tested. This usually happened on the hunt when a young Mi'kmaq was confronted with an angry bear or moose. So far, Actodon had not been tested. Until he was, he could not enter manhood with honor. At night, his mind was often filled with dreams of himself swimming powerfully out to sea, and there, where the water knew no bottom, he overcame a sea lion, taming it so that it could be ridden between the islands. In other dreams, he rode a whale that carried him north to the land of perpetual ice and snow, where he slew great white bears with his bow and arrow. As the sun burned higher, the fog began to lift. It rose silently, imperceptibly, revealing many islands extending far beyond the mouth of the great bay. Actodon knew if he kept close to shore, he would be less likely to lose his way. Not that he had ever been lost. Occasionally, he had taken the wrong turn, but he had always been able to find his way back to camp. It was well past noon when he finally came to the place where the grass grew into the sea and a narrow freshwater stream flowed into it. Actodon knew of no better place for eels. He had discovered it the summer before, and no one from his camp, not even Tagalog, knew exactly where it was. Actodon wrapped two worms around the gorge and tied them in place with root twine. He dropped the line into the water. Immediately there was a jerk on the end of the line. With a strong pull, he brought the squirming eel into the canoe. Using the same line, Actodon caught another eel, then another, until he had filled the birch bark pot. "You see, Miko," Actodon said, "my swimming has not hurt the fishing, and now that I've proved that, we'll leave the rest for tomorrow." He stowed his fishing gear and paddled the canoe toward the shore. It was then that he thought he heard water splashing. Miko heard it too. He sat, ears tensed and pointing, in front of the canoe. He was too well trained to bark, knowing the importance of being quiet in strange situations. Actodon eased the canoe behind a small, rocky promontory, stepped out, and peered over the top of the rocks. There in the water was a white man. He was swimming easily across the channel, separating the mainland from a nearby island. When he was close enough to the shore, he stood up and began wading the short distance to the beach. To Actodon's surprise, he was not a man at all, but a boy, a tall, thin boy, who looked about his own age. Actodon had never seen a white person so blonde or so fair. He crept carefully along the promontory and into the woods. Miko followed, and the two of them stood quietly watching the pale young man bury himself in the sand, something Actodon often did himself. Miko, too, recognized the familiarity of this gesture, and after remaining still for a short time, the little dog abandoned his usual caution. With his bushy tail wagging behind him, he trotted across the sand, eager to give the newcomer an exploratory sniff. The end of chapter 13.